34. What we're going to do is I want to read through this. Sometimes I think there's an advantage. I want to go through this the way I would go through it with my class at Cornell instead of preaching. There's an advantage towards looking at a text in a literary way instead of looking at a text on a doctrinal fashion. Sometimes because we've heard things, oh, they're looking for the big one, and they'll never find it. So thank you. Oh, yeah. Poor doggies looking for the big one, and I think we got it out in the youth room. Okay. There's an advantage towards looking at a text and asking what we call critical questions. What do they mean by this? And then going back and saying, why did they say it? Here comes Doug with that one. He got it. He retrieved it, yeah. Well, we've been giving it to Mark because I don't look too bad with that, but he'd look terribly ridiculous with that one. Thanks. And this helps me to lean anyways. I can sit back and lean. Okay, let's go do it. What I want us to do is to look at the text, and then I want to ask you some questions, and you have to answer. All right? All right, so let's read through. Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her, lay with her, and violated her. His soul was strongly attracted to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the young woman and spoke kindly to the young woman. Anything strike you as odd about those verses? Ironic? Pardon? Yeah, taking her by force and then being deeply attracted to her. Does that strike you as being odd? Okay, it should. I want to remind you of another passage in the Bible very similar to this, and that is a young man named Amnon who does the same thing to his sister Tamar, but it's exactly the opposite. He is deeply, deeply attracted to her, sick with love, as the Bible puts it. Then his creepy cousin tells him how to do it, and he takes her by force, and afterwards what? He hates her. And it's kind of an interesting turnaround, but we'll come back. There's more going on. This is not your typical situation of some serial, what we call a rapist, running around. Okay? There's more to it than this. So, in verse 4, well, I will present to you, the word rape means something completely different as a basic Hebrew word than it means in the English language, as a basic English word. You know, rape is akin to the word rapture. What does the word rapture mean? What is the rapture? Pardon? What is the rapture? Yeah. The word rape is the root rapio. Rapture is to seize something and carry it off. It's to carry something away. That when God carries us away to heaven, it's the rapture. When you're, you know, you love somebody so much, you're taken away, seized, and carried away with them, that's rapture. That's what the word really means. In America, it's come to mean something slightly different. But I want to show you that here, we're dealing with something slightly different than what we would think in American culture. Verse 4, so Shechem spoke to his father, Hamor, saying, get me this young woman as a wife. Okay? And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. Now his sons were the livestock in the field, so Jacob held his peace until they came. Anything strike you as odd about that? Pardon? Yeah. How is he upset? He doesn't seem upset at all. It says he held his peace till they came in from the field. Now, before, get the order down. Look what happens before they come in from the field. Okay? Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. So there's a period of time here. Here are the events. The event takes place in the field. All right? Jacob hears about it. Right? Holds his peace. He waits for his son to come home and to tell them about it. But in the meantime, before his sons come home, this man, Shechem, sends his father to bargain for her as a wife. There's a little bit of time going on here, isn't there? And there's these events happening. So the father comes to bargain. Verse 7, and the sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard it. The men were grieved and very angry because he had done a disgraceful thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, a thing which ought not to be done. They're mad. They're angry about it. They don't need to wait to get angry about it. They're angry right away. And by the way, what's also odd, why did Jacob wait? What was Jacob's reasoning for waiting? And then he would do what, presumably? Tell them. But what happened? They already knew about it. They heard about it. Something's odd. Something's going on here, and it's wrong with Jacob, is the point I want to make. The text is trying to tell you there's something wrong with Jacob here. The reactions are wrong. What Shechem did is certainly wrong, but there's something going on here. Notice, but Hamor spoke with them. Now, when the brothers come in the ancient Near East, it is the brothers who were actually the brokers of marriage for their sister. Wouldn't you ladies have loved that? Your brother is the one who does the bargaining for you as a wife, not the father. It's interesting, we saw that in earlier cases with Rebekah. When Abraham's servant is trying to do the marriage bargaining, he does it with Rebekah's brother, not with the others. And so these brothers are there as brokers of the deal in that setting, and so he speaks with them. The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him as a wife, okay? And make marriages with us. Give your daughters to us and take our daughters to yourselves. Anything strike you odd about that? Suppose you were Jacob or the brothers listening. What would strike you odd about that phrase? Okay. A number one, God said, don't marry those people. All right. That had been the reason why Jacob had to go all the way to Paddan Aram to get married. God said, don't intermarry with them. Anything else? Okay, this Hamor does. Does it strike you odd? I was thinking that he uses the phrase, let's see if I can find it here, give your daughters and take our daughters. What does he mean, take our daughters? Well, underline that. I'm going to come back to that in a moment. Okay? All of these phrases are here on purpose, and we miss them because we miss the cultural significance of some of these things. You shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade in it, and acquire possessions for yourself in it. In those days, you have to understand that where there's lots of movement of peoples, many different people groups and travelers and traders move from place to place. But one of the things we know very specifically about that period of time was that foreigners were not allowed to own land. When they moved from place to place, they could not own land. It was a way of protecting yourself from a bunch of foreigners coming in and buying up the property and then you finding yourself without an inheritance. That is why it is such a big deal for Abraham to purchase a burial place for Sarah. Remember? He bargains for it and he says, no, I want to purchase this. No, I'm going to give you money. Well, you don't. I'm giving you money. The reason is because Abraham was asking for something that was quite unusual. I want land from you. I want to be a landowner. In those days, we know from documents, thousands of documents, that they didn't want foreigners to own land. The foreigners could live there and trade there and work there, but they couldn't own land. That was only for the people of the town. Okay? So they're offering them something quite attractive here. You're living among us, but now we'll let you own land and be one of us. So they're really offering something attractive here. Okay? And then Shechem said to her father and her brothers. Now, this is the rapist speaking to the family. Okay. Let me find favor in your eyes. Let me find favor in your eyes. Yeah. You just go out and check out the grill on my truck and I'll be right there. You know, let me see if these gears are holding or slipping. You know. Yeah, I'm gonna be you find real favor in my eyes. Whatsoever you say to me, I will give. All right, he's saying, I'm willing to do whatever you ask. I'm willing to pay whatever you want for your daughter.
Ask me ever so much dowry and gift, and I will give according to what you say to me, but give me the young woman as my wife. Here's a guy who's obviously quite sincere. Here's a guy who is, for whatever his motives are, which we're going to see are somewhat different, for whatever his motives are, they're obviously sincere. But the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor, his father, and spoke deceitfully because he had defiled Dinah, their sister. And this they said to them, we cannot do this thing to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a reproach to us. Now, the Jews were not the only ones who were circumcised. We know several ancient cultures were, like the Egyptians, all right? One of the differences in the Egyptians, I don't know if Dan remembers this from class, the Egyptians circumcised when the boys were 12 or 13 years old, all right? Personally, I prefer the 8 days, you know, but they circumcised when they were 12 or 13. Any people who practiced a ritual separation of themselves from other people, any group of people who said, we can't intermarry, we can't intermingle, we're supposed to be separate, practice circumcision. And the Egyptians did that. Oh, by the way, the Egyptians were also maintained what they considered kosher laws, their own laws about food. Well, here, the Jews are saying to them, the sons of Jacob, you're not circumcised. You don't have the sign of the covenant. We can't marry you to our daughter. Okay? But on this condition, we will consent. If you will become as we are, every male of you is circumcised. Then we will give our daughters to you. We will take your daughters to us. That same phrase. We will dwell with you, and we will become one people. But if you will not heed us and be circumcised, then we'll take our daughter and be gone. Then we'll do what? He says, if you won't listen to us and become what, and get circumcised, then we will what? Take our daughter. Underline that. What's he mean, we'll take our daughter and be gone? Who? Well, what's he implying he's going to do here? Okay, he's going to leave. Why does he say we'll take our daughter and go? Underline that. We'll come back to that in a moment. Their words please, we'll come back to right where Carol was. Their words please Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. By the way, it says they're speaking deceitfully, but their words pleased Hamor. You have to know a little Hebrew here. You need to remember what Hemer is, or Hamor? It's Hebrew for donkey or ass. All right? So they love this name. Shechem, by the way, is the city of Sychar. It's the city of Nablus today. It's that city. But this guy, his name means donkey or ass, you know, or fool. It's what his name means. That sounds good to me. Let me go back and talk everybody else into it. So the young man did not delay to do the thing. He's running off to get circumcised. He's tearing out the door to go get circumcised because he delighted in Jacob's daughter. Now, by the way, this is really interesting. Really, really kind of interesting. Somebody is about to get cheated on the bride price and is willing to do it because he loves the daughter so much. Have we seen that before? Who's that? Anybody? Who loved the daughter so much that the in-laws cheated him on a false dowry, but he was willing to put up with it because of the love he had for the daughter. Anybody? Jacob. The Bible takes these little hints, these little clues, and connects stories together. And right away you know this poor guy is going to get cheated. Right away you know, because he's going to lose a little bit more than 7 years. He's going to get cheated pretty bad here. Because he was delighted in Jacob's daughter. He was more honorable than all the household of his father. What does that mean to you? Who was more honorable than all the household of his father? Who is it talking about? Okay, I'll read the verse again. So the young man did not delay to do the thing because he was delighted in Jacob's daughter. He was more honorable than all the household of his father. Who was? Anything strike you as odd about that phrase? Yeah, he's a skunk. He's a hemor. You know, he's a nitwit, but he's more honorable than the rest of his house. The idea is they probably deserve what's coming to them, but it shouldn't happen to, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, but they probably deserve what's coming to them. The Bible puts these little phrases that he was more honorable than the rest of them. So he's going to go back and talk to the rest of them. Hamor and Shechem and his son came to the gate of the city, always where their business was transacted, in the gate of the city, saying, "These men are at peace with us, therefore let them dwell in the land and trade in it." Okay? "For indeed the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters as wives, and let us give them our daughters," take again, "only on this condition will the men consent to dwell with us, to be one people. If every male among us is circumcised as they're circumcised." Now this Hamor is not such a fool. He knows that he's got a tough job of selling. You know, it's like Chuck Schumer telling us that he's going to do something great for upstate New York. You know, it's a tough sell job sometimes. You know, he's got to come up with a better ad. He's got to come up with a real selling point here. Well, he does. "But will not their livestock, their property, and every animal of theirs be ours?" You have to understand that you've got two different ways of living. Jacob's a Bedouin. Shechem and his father are city dwellers. City dwellers have land, property. Bedouins do not. So the Bedouins want the property. But city dwellers don't have livestock. They don't have animals and capital. That's capital. That's cash money animals are. Farmers are always short of that. That's a big thing, the landed farmers. So what he's doing is he comes to Jacob and offers him something that would have been attractive. But his own people, he says, "No, we'll get all their livestock. All of it will be ours. You know, we'll marry in and we'll get it." Again, this goes back to Jacob, who had, when he married the daughters of Laban, it was the livestock he had in mind. He wanted the cattle. He wanted the sheep. He wanted the property. That's why he married both daughters, so he'd get all the property. So the Bible is making this same connection here. Notice, "Only let us consent, and they will dwell with us." All right? "We'll get all the livestock." Just a small favor to ask of you, just a couple minutes of your time. "And all who went out of the gate of the city heeded Hamor and Shechem his son. Every male was circumcised, all who went out." The idea of going out the gate of the city is a warrior. It said David went out and came in before the people. The guys, the people who can go outside the gate are obviously adult males who can protect themselves. So all the warriors, all the men of the city, the whole city, but especially the warriors. Now this is the phrase that always captures my attention. "Now it came to pass on the third day when they were in pain." A question arises in anybody's mind? Anybody? Huh? What's it mean, the third day when they were in pain? What about day one and day two? What were those? Kind of like Tylenol days? You know, what's it mean on the third day when they were in pain? I mean, it seems to me that we're not talking about something that it's like, these must have been pretty dull if the pain didn't set in for 2 days. But it's these little things on the third day when they absolutely, positively couldn't move, when they couldn't move at all, that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each took his sword and came boldly upon the city and killed all the males. They kill Hamor and Shechem his son with the edge of the sword. And let's read the last part of that. "And took Dinah from Shechem's house." Did you think Dinah was in Shechem's house the whole time? No. This is the point of the story. They hide it here. What had happened is Shechem hadn't simply assaulted her in the field. He'd brought her back to his house. You have to understand something about marriage customs among Bedouins and the ancient Near East. A matter of fact, many, many different ancient peoples. Women were courted, if you will, by being seized and carried off and taken for marriage. A common way of doing it, going back to the caveman, you know, the club, bunk, you come with me. But in those days, often, that's how it happened. And what would happen is that you would carry the bride off, and then you would negotiate the bridal price for her with her family. But your carrying her off is what determines she would be married to you. Now that is completely opposed to the values of our culture. But in their days, it had quite a few values. One of the values was is it stopped you from intermarrying within your own tribe. You're a Bedouin. You're traveling back and forth. All you see are the same people all the time. You grew up with the same people. Kind of like growing up in the little church I grew up in. You know, same youth group, same people, same whatever. You know, you couldn't possibly marry them because you'd seen them your whole life. But that thing, and the way that you intermarried was with another tribe. Well, how are you going to do that? You were almost always in a constant state of war with another tribe.
Well, if you carry off one of the daughters for that tribe, what does that do between the two tribes? It brings peace. You have a natural connection between the two. By the way, women were almost always given to foreigners as a way of cementing peace bonds. Giving of a daughter or giving of a bride was quite often a way of cementing a bond of peace. Remember, that's what happened to Solomon. The Pharaoh gave his daughter to Solomon, almost as an ambassador in Solomon's court. And then the Pharaoh came up and captured a very important city and gave it to Solomon as a present, as a bridal present. That's a common way of being married. I won't go there, but in the end of the book of Judges, the tribe of Benjamin has been decimated. Literally, 9 out of 10 men killed. All of the tribes of Israel said, we will not allow our daughters to marry anybody from Benjamin. Anybody remember why? What had Benjamin done that was so terrible that they were destroyed? Nobody remembers. Well, I'm glad I covered that in Sunday school so thoroughly. Benjamin had countenanced homosexuality. The Levite was traveling up through the tribe of Benjamin, Saul's home in Gibeah, and was assaulted by homosexuals outside the door. And the people of Benjamin protected the homosexuals. They coddled the homosexuals. They made it legal. God hated it so much, he destroyed the entire tribe of Benjamin. So now, after they almost destroy the whole tribe, they say, what have we done? This tribe will never exist. We promised, we covenanted together, we wouldn't let our daughters marry them. How do we do it? Well, they did it two ways. They found a tribe of people who hadn't made part of the covenant. But then they said, our girls are dancing in Shiloh, a woman's harvest dance. The women are dancing there. You guys sneak up and take them and bring them home as brides. It was an accepted way in the Middle East for somebody to get a bride, to do that. Okay? And it's kind of pot luck for the woman, of course. But on the other hand, he had to take an initiative. You know, he couldn't be a coward. He had to be willing to travel. You know, had to have a vehicle. Those aren't things you always get on a date. You know, I don't mean to make it any better, but it was the way the world worked in those days. Here is what, back chapter 34, is going on. He isn't just some serial rapist out in the field. He brings her back and says, I'm marrying you. I hereby marry you, and you'll be my wife, and of course your family will bargain in good faith. He's acting upon some pretty well-established principles of carrying them off. Things, by the way, that even Israel would do at a later date. But he runs afoul of the brothers. So the brothers come through the city and kill everything. And by the way, that's why that word, take our daughters, is constantly emphasized. Take our daughters. Because it's a cultural clue that the daughters aren't actually just given, they have to be taken. All right? That the daughters... Do you guys ever know what a shivery is? How many of you know what a shivery is? What did you do for Pastor Hayden when he was married? Pastor Hayden was pastor of this church. What did you do when he was married? You did what? Tell everybody. This is Pastor Hayden, right? When he was married to his first wife. Aren't you glad that you didn't let him do this and they married you? Tell him what the Pastor Hayden was pastor. What did you do? In the middle of the night, just him?
I wasn't here at that time.
No, I didn't do it. Right. How many of you know about that? A shivery is part of the wedding where they actually take the bride off or take the groom off. So it's practiced here in the wilds of New York State. Aren't some of you ladies glad you knew about this custom? In fact, when we were at Houghton, we went to a friend's wedding at Cincinnatus. First time I'd ever been to Cincinnatus. And it might have been before the old church. I don't know, when was the school building built in Cincinnatus? And the larger part of the church. I don't know, but a little church in Cincinnatus, we go, and they actually kidnap the bride and after the wedding and drive around with her for, 45 minutes. And the groom, unfortunately, was not a native of America. Jay was a friend of ours, and he's from Puerto Rico. Now, he didn't accept that so well. You crazy New York State idiots have got my wife, you know. He wasn't happy, and they were like, this is going over really well. And the best men are saying, can you just find the car and bring her back? You know, not bring her. That's okay.
But it was a real interesting thing. And he didn't understand it was a custom. He didn't understand it was part. How many of you have never heard of this? Never. This is part of your cultural heritage, girls. It's part of your cultural heritage. What culture we've got is low. Okay. The point I want to make is taking the bride. Taking them is often, and it even gets carried over into a concept. It's almost like the bride being lifted up and carried across the threshold. That's the origin of that. She's being carried away and carried into the house, a Western custom. That's what he was doing, and that's why all the way through, take our daughters. Take our daughters. Take them. Okay? It has that extra connotation that that's what I did with your daughter. It's a very legitimate, legal thing. The question is then, who is the greatest sinner here? He did that. It was right according to his culture. What is the passage going to emphasize? Well, notice, verse 27. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and plundered the city because their sister had been defiled. They took the sheep, their oxen, their donkeys, what was in the city, what was in the field, all their wealth. Sounds like the Grinch the night before Christmas, you know. Even the rare who roast beast, they took it along with them. All their little ones and their wives, they took captives. They plundered everything that was in the houses. You know, they took the toilet paper off the rolls. They just took everything. And it's like, wait a minute here. You're avenging your sister. Okay, maybe I could see putting Hamor to death. By the way, see if I can find it for you. You couldn't do that in Deuteronomy. In Deuteronomy, when a man says he raped a woman, his first thing was, will you marry her? If you don't understand the cultural background, it's like, what a sick law. You've got to marry your rapist? Well, if it's an American Western setting, yes. But if it's in the setting that somebody has taken your daughter off to marry her, it's like, yes, that was a legitimate act. Is he going to follow through? Is he going to marry her? And so here, they could have said, okay, well, we don't want anything to do with it. They could have killed him. It seems to me that just circumcising the poor guy was punishment enough. But they could have killed the guy. Maybe they could have killed his father. But to kill everybody in town, to steal every last thing they had, to plunder their houses, that's sick. That's sick. Notice what happens. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, you have troubled me, making me obnoxious making me stink, is what it says in the Hebrew. Now I stink to all the people around here, among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. Since I am few in number, they will gather themselves together against me and kill me. I shall be destroyed, my household and I. Okay. Turn with me to, let's go to Genesis 49. This actually carries through. Jacob never forgets this event. On his deathbed, when he is blessing his sons, this is what he says to them. Now remember, his first four sons are Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. They're sons by Leah. Okay, his wife Leah had four sons to begin with. Here's what he says in his blessing, verse 3. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might and my beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and excellency of power. But you're unstable as water. You shall not excel because you went up to your father's bed and defiled it. He actually slept with his father's concubine. You're cut out of the inheritance. You'll never have the right of the firstborn. Now, Simeon and Levi, the two who committed this deed, with the city of Shechem. Simeon and Levi are brothers, meaning they act just like each other. Instruments of cruelty are in their dwelling place. Let not my soul enter into their council. Let not my honor be united to their assembly. What he's trying to say is, I had no part in what they did. Don't connect my honor with their treachery. Don't think I was a part of that. For in their anger they slew a man, in their self-will they hamstrung an ox. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. This literally happens. The tribe of Simeon originally has the southernmost portion of inheritance below Judah. But they get sucked up into Judah, and after, we don't ever see anything about the tribe of Simeon after the book of Judges. Never again do we see the tribe of Simeon. They're scattered among the tribe of Judah. And the same with Levi. God does not give Levi any single inheritance. He scatters them among the tribes. We always look at that from the positive side. You're priest to the Lord, and that's your inheritance. There's also a negative side. I'm going to scatter you because you're not trustworthy. I'm going to scatter you because of this evil you did. You won't get any portion or any inheritance. So Jacob means that. But come back here one more time to chapter 34. Anything strike you odd about verse 30, about Jacob's words in verse 30, about his complaint? They will gather themselves together and kill me and my household. I shall be destroyed, my household, and I. Anything at all? Own hide, and not whom? Not his daughter. Where's the thought about Leah in all of this? Where's it, Leah? The thought about Dinah in all of this. Now notice the next phrase. But they said, should he treat our sister like a harlot? Who is he? Give me a suggestion. Or Jacob. The Bible loves to make things ambiguous, meaning two meanings. Should he treat our sister like a harlot? It fits equally well. They're answering their father and saying, what choice did we have? Can we let Shechem treat our father like a harlot? Or they're saying, why should we let our father treat our daughter like she's a whore to be given around to everybody? They're noticing that their father doesn't have any concern for their daughter. All of these little things that we have been pointing out, the fact that he waited. And by the way, he shows no emotion whatsoever. I'll wait till my sons come back from the field. The fact that he's actually bargaining with the father when they come in. They walk into the middle of the bargaining session. So they've done this and he's actually bargaining that. And the fact that after the deed is done, he's just concerned about me. And they're saying, well, how can we let you treat our sister this way? Why might he have done that? Why might he have been willing to do that with his daughter? Why would these two guys be sensitive? The answer's in the first verse. Why? Somebody look at that first verse and tell me what they were thinking of, what they were conscious of, what was in the back of their mind. Pardon? It's their sister. What else? Who else is mentioned in that verse? And how might that enter into it? Leah. How might that enter into the picture? Pardon? It's the other side. Leah as compared to whom? Meaning what? Jacob's favorite. Meaning you never did love our mother. You never did favor our mother. You always favored Rachel. If Rachel had had a daughter, you wouldn't have let this happen to him. Now, Dinah, the daughter of Leah, why do they put that down? Because he is treating her with as little concern as he treated Leah. He never cared for Leah. He never did anything. And don't you think that the two sons of Leah would have seen that? Had nothing but contempt for their father? By the way, that may account for why Reuben had so much contempt for his father. To do what he did, because he saw the way his father treated his mother. What would you think if you were growing up as a boy, very much attached to your mother in a household, and saw not only that your father didn't love your mother, but that your father favored another woman, that your father favored others and the children of another? What would you think if the father had a wife and the two sons from Rachel, the two he loved the most, Benjamin, already? And by the way, this is the link. What we had seen going before was the story about how that whole family situation revolved around the fact that he had two wives, one that he loved and one that he didn't. That was the story of all the children's names. How do they get their names? Because the two sisters were fighting for Jacob's love. What's the story going to be later on when we read about the children and Joseph? They're jealous of Joseph because Joseph is the favorite of their father, because Joseph is the son of Rachel, the loved wife. Every place we see it, and that's the story here. When we don't treat this like literature and read the clues, we miss that. And it's a biblical principle we're actually missing. Jacob's foolish marriage, his foolish principle of having two wives, one whom he loved and one whom he didn't, will haunt his family in every aspect of his life. As they're growing up, they see it. Their very names. We've told you this. Their names are because their mothers are fighting. Ah, I've got the victory now. Dan, God has judged me. Naphtali, I wrestled with my sister and I beat her this time. How'd you like to have a name that indicates what your mother's thought about her sisters? Ye, you know, a name like, you know, my sister's a fat pig. You know, that's your baptismal name, your birth name, you know, or, well, you ugly cow. That could have been your name, you know, if your parents allowed that to go on. Well, that was the problem with the names. They're so unhappy. Here, these boys not only commit these utter cruelties, and by the way, they think nothing of killing all these people. They're so protective of their sister, they're willing to kill somebody. They don't know what natural affection is. They have no sense of natural affection, and that's what Jacob says in chapter 48. You don't understand affection. You're killers. You're vicious killers. You could actually go through and just kill helpless people. I don't know how you would do that. How you would be able to walk into a room and kill somebody who is helpless. You know, maybe killing somebody who is fighting you. On the way home Wednesday night, I had to kill a deer. Somebody hit it in the road and broken, you know, the back hindquarters, and it was scrabbling all over the center of the road. It really, ugh. It was right up the road from our house, so I got in, I called the sheriff, and because you're not really supposed to, and I said, I'm going to go out and shoot the stupid thing, because I can't stand seeing him. Besides, it's a hazard. It's right in the middle of the road. And it couldn't get off the road because there are railings on both sides of the road right there. And so the dispatcher said, go ahead and do it. I don't know how much authority a dispatcher had, but so I grabbed my shotgun and ran up there, got all the way up there, and realized I didn't have a flashlight. And it's the middle of the night, and it's not an easy shot because the stupid deer is in pain, head's going back and forth, and you're really close to it. So, you know, the gun has to traverse quite a bit, and it's dark. And I said, I see somebody with a flashlight up the road, one of our neighbors. I said, I need some light here. The guy from the porch next door to us, I hear him yell out, I've got a cigarette lighter. And they're like, light it. You know, go ahead. You know, what are you going to do? Hold the cigarette? I do not know. I saw he just used it. So maybe I don't know what he'd used it on, but he was smoking something. But I kill the deer, but shoot it in the back of the head. And it bothered me all night long. I mean, I had nightmares about killing a deer. Now, I've hunted before, but to see a deer in pain, and you know what I'm trying to say? It bothered me. It still does. But you're doing something for it. You're actually trying to put it down, and it's a murder. But that was a tough thing for me to do. What kind of guys can walk in and murder? And by the way, no shooting, no second intermediary. You take a knife or a spear, and you've got to kill them that way. And people don't die quickly. I don't know what you've been told, but people don't die quickly from knife wounds or spear wounds. If you want to kill them, you have to do it more than once. You have to stab them several times. What kind of guys can do that? The kind of guys who are raised in a home who don't know what affection is. They were raised in a home when they saw their father and their mother and the lack of love that was there. They grew up without a concept of love. They grew up with unnatural affection. They grew up and were able to commit the cruelest acts and think nothing about it. What they had was a fierce protection of their sister without any of the tenderness and affection of love. That's what this story's all about. It's always all about how Jacob messed up his family and the terrible thing the kids had to live with and the terrible things that the kids did. And all Jacob can think about is, you made me look so bad. You made me look so bad. Hey, when you read these passages and pull them apart and look at them in a literary fashion, why was this said? What happened here? And then look at the culture behind it. A lot of times it can really help you to understand the biblical message, which is, look what Jacob did to his family. And if you don't think they have unnatural affections, these are the same kids who are willing to kill his other son. They're willing to kill to defend their sister, but they're just as willing to kill their little brother Joseph because of their jealousy, because of the fact that their mother wasn't the favored one. They're easily willing to kill him and just as willing to sell him. And even more than that, they're willing to come home and fool their dad into thinking he was torn apart by a wild lion.
Remember, they bring the garment back with the blood on it. He created a family full of unnatural affection. Really a pretty sick thing to do. And we've got to learn to read the text and see that's a major emphasis when you put them all together. And that's what's in the Dinah story. Let's pray. Oh, Father, I praise you for your word. I praise you for the truth of it. Help us to study it. Not, Father, on the surface reading level that we so often do, but to see what you teach us about love, about yourself, about our families, about our failures, about those things that are so necessary in our children. I pray, Father, that you might make us as husbands and wives more thoughtful and considerate, that, Father, we might be cautious as to what our children see and have seen in us. I pray, Father, that you might make us to be more aware of the love and the growth that we can have in Jesus Christ. And, Father, I pray that you'd be pleased with what you see in your people tonight. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
You get a hymnal here?